Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. The way that we work has changed. It has changed and it continues to change. Some people are heading back to the office 5 days a week. Some are only working from home. Others are taking their work abroad. And I get so excited just thinking about this idea. If you are looking to make the shift to becoming a digital nomad, there's obviously huge opportunities, but there are also some financial considerations that you need to think about. Nora Dunn is a longtime digital nomad, like long, long time before the pandemic. She's also a financial expert at NerdWallet, and she's going to talk about some of the financial ins and outs of this particular lifestyle choice. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Where is the most glamorous place you have ever worked?
Oh, must
I know it's
choose?
A hard call because I know you're making you choose. I mean, you've been doing this since what, 2006?
I have. Considered an OG.
Give me one
digital
example.
Nomad.
It doesn't have to be the most, but a glamorous place.
Well, I'll tell you, a pretty sweet gig that I had. I was house sitting for 3 months in Switzerland one summer. And among other things, I had not only the three-story house in Zurich, but I also had a Swiss Alpine cottage. I had the car. I could be at either place whenever I wanted. All I had to do was open the mail and keep the orchids alive. So that was pretty glamorous. And it was completely free as well. So there's that.
How do you define the phrase digital nomad? What does it mean to you?
Digital nomad, it's interesting, is in its initial incantations, the pure definition of digital nomad was someone who works remotely while traveling full-time and not having a home base at all. Now, a common misconception about what it means to be a digital nomad is that it is a job, as in, how do I apply to be a digital nomad? Mm. But the reality is, it's a lifestyle, it's not a job. So it's a lifestyle that's enabled by the ability to work remotely. And you can work remotely as an employee of a company or as a freelancer or an online business owner. And certainly if we look at silver linings from the pandemic, it is that companies around the world were forced to go remote or become obsolete. So now there are millions upon millions of people who have remote careers. And now if they choose, they have the ability to start traveling long-term while working remotely. So that initial pure definition of digital nomad being someone who is completely homeless and travels full time has actually broadened now. And it is now includes anyone who likes to travel long term while working remotely, even if you have a home base, we'll still call you a digital nomad.
We're going to talk about the financials in a second. But before we do, what would you say is the single best part about being a digital nomad for you? What has that be awesome?
My immediate answer and the immediate answer of pretty much anyone who does this, has this as a lifestyle, will be one word: freedom. Mm-hmm. It is the freedom to work where you want, when you want, how you want, and really to be able to choose your vista. So again, it's important to note that a digital nomad lifestyle is not a vacation per se. You are working full time. But the advantage is when you close your laptop for the day and the day's work is done, you have a completely new destination on your doorstep to explore and to really experience what it's like to live around the world in these different amazing spots.
I love that you started with the image of you in Zurich and the chalet and all that. I can imagine one of the things for digital nomads to figure out is the cost component. Where are they living? How much does it cost? Not everybody is going to be able to go from house sit to house sit. What advice do you have on managing the accommodation line of the budget?
Accommodation is going to be your single most expensive component of the digital nomad lifestyle. I actually stumbled in my own journey to becoming a digital nomad. I stumbled into all these ways to actually get accommodation for free. And house sitting is just one of five different ways that you can actually get your accommodation for free while traveling the world. And in my first 10 years abroad, I saved over $100,000 by getting my accommodation for free. And before you conjure up some image of me staying in, a cardboard shack at the side of the road or having to, bunk up in dorms and share showers, I was staying in places like this Swiss Alpine cottage that I mentioned. So that's definitely, if you can save the money on accommodation by getting it for free, that's going to be fantastic. But that's not going to be everybody's speed. And not all of the five forms of free accommodation are perfectly suited to the digital nomad lifestyle. Here's the thing. When you get out of the vacation mindset and you start traveling slowly around the world, you will not be staying in hotels. So your cost of accommodation might not be as high as you might think at the outset if you were planning a 1 or 2 week vacation somewhere, because you will have the ability to rent places on longer term basis, so that will cost you less. You can also look at various new things that are coming up for digital nomads, like co-living opportunities where you have your own room and bathroom, but then you might share common area spaces and workspaces. So there are lots of new things that are coming around that can help you not only save money on common accommodation, but then also to have some really interesting cultural experiences. One thing that I was really pleased to discover, and it completely surprised me when I started traveling full-time, is that the cost to travel full-time is actually much lower than it is to live in one place. And saving money on accommodation was one of those reasons, but then there were a few other reasons, like currency and geo arbitrage, and also too, quite frankly, when everything you own fits into a suitcase, you're not going to buy a lot of stuff. So right. Consumerism is taken right off the table.
How do you think about banking? Because, you know, you can bank online anywhere, but in many cultures, you still need to have cash in your wallet in order to buy stuff at the market.
Absolutely. While as a world, we're definitely moving more towards the plastic society and not using cash, there are some countries where cash is still king. And there's a few pieces of advice that I have, one of which is make sure you have a travel-friendly bank account. So when you use foreign ATMs, if you have a really basic no-frills type of bank account, you're likely to get charged every time you use the ATM. Now, when I was in Peru and I had to pay for my accommodation with cash, that ATM also, the ATMs in Peru also had a really low withdrawal limit. So within one session at the ATM, I had to make multiple withdrawals. And I realized at the end of the day, I just paid like $30 in withdrawal fees because of that. So if you have a travel-friendly bank account, look for a bank account that includes free foreign ATM withdrawals. Now, this usually is something that's included in a higher tier, a higher level of bank account. So it might come with a monthly fee. However, if you maintain a certain balance in that account, then you won't have to pay that monthly fee. The other really big piece of advice I have is if you have the opportunity to use a credit card, make sure you have a credit card with no foreign transaction fees. That is also expressed as no FX fees. This is going to save you an invisible 3% surcharge that the credit card company would otherwise tack on to the base currency exchange rate. You don't see it, but it is the silent killer of budgets. And using credit cards while you travel is really fantastic for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is being able to track your expenses. You could often get frequent flyer miles or cash back. So it's great to use a card, but you just got to make sure you're using the right one. I have to say, at nerdwallet.ca, if you click on the credit card section at the top of the page, you'll find all kinds of really interesting guides that'll help you find the perfect credit card for your specific needs.
How do you think about taxes? Where do you pay? How do you make sure you save enough? Because maybe it's not withdrawn at source if you're a freelancer.
Yeah, depending on your employment situation, you might need to be a little more proactive about making sure that you have money set aside for taxes. In all of my years of being a digital nomad, certainly prior to the pandemic, there was because I wasn't actually a resident of any other country. I never stayed anywhere long enough to be a resident of that country. So there was no tax to be paid in that case. So I continued to file my Canadian taxes every single year, and I would claim my worldwide income on my Canadian taxes. And that basically meant I was considered a factual resident of Canada. Now, things have definitely changed. They're evolving post-pandemic. There's all these countries that are offering various digital nomad and remote work styles of visas. And this also includes an ability to address the tax situation. Because if you do plan on getting one of these special visas and staying for a much longer period of time than a standard tourist visa would allow, then there may be tax. But then again, there may also be a tax treaty between Canada and that country. So it does get a little bit more complicated as you get into this lifestyle. I often say, you know, make sure that you align yourself with an accountant who's familiar with remote work and working abroad. And then that way they can advise you accordingly.
What is the insurance that you would not do this without? Is it health, augmented health insurance? Is it, what is it?
Never, ever, ever travel without insurance. If you can't afford insurance, you can't afford to travel. I'll just say that. And there are definitely many kinds of insurance, but the most important one to consider is emergency travel medical insurance. This means if something happens to you that was unexpected, these are the sort of events that can bankrupt you if you're not prepared for it. So if you have insurance that will cover medical emergencies while you are abroad, then that is the most important thing to have. In my experience, paying for preventative medicine, doctor's visits, and maybe minor prescriptions is actually quite affordable to do it by cash. So if you had to choose one specific form of insurance, it should be one that covers emergency medical scenarios.
We have just piqued the interest for a lot of our listeners, I am sure. If you were to point them towards a resource or two on pursuing a life as a digital nomad, would it be a blog? Would it be a Instagram influencer? Would it be a book? What would feed their curiosity in addition to the conversation that we have just had?
Well, I would be completely remiss not to mention my own website, which is theprofessionalhobo.com.
Oh, amazing.
Where I help people travel long-term and work remotely. And I love digging into all the specifics and the nitties and gritties, as well as sharing lots of tales of adventure and misadventure alike.
Love it. Nora, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Bruce. It's been a pleasure.
Nora Dunn has been a digital nomad since 2006, which is so inspiring in and of itself. She is also a financial expert at NerdWallet.